Thank you kindly, Paul. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak to you this morning. When I saw the session I was placed into, I was beginning to wonder whether I would really fit, because I'm really at the analysis stage of the data here, but it is, I think it is quite appropriate to be discussing how measurements that we make as scientists of nitrous oxide fluxes fit into things that we have to think about how it's going to eventually be implemented on the farm. And so these presentations that went ahead of me on the NRCS programs and things that are already addressing this are excellent and set an excellent background for this talk. I'm going to talk to you about a project, essentially it's a meta-analysis on nitrous oxide emissions that have been measured in eastern Canada. And this is a study that was motivated by a protocol that has been developed starting really in western Canada. It's called NERP. It's just short form for Nitrous Oxide Emission Reduction Protocol. And it began in Alberta because Alberta is apparently the first government to formally recognize farm practices for greenhouse gas credits. And there is already an active carbon trading protocol in place. The Nitrous Oxide Emission Reduction Protocol was approved just a few weeks ago after about 3 years of development efforts. And I want to make the point that a protocol like this, most of us in this room would consider ourselves scientists, and we would really think that, you know, scientists need to have a heavy role in developing these protocols. That is true. Science is very important, but these protocols also involve a lot of political, legal, regulatory aspects, and they need to involve the concerns of other stakeholders as well. So what I'm trying to say, is that protocols depend on science, but our science also needs to be directed to support protocols, and that's essentially what we're trying to do here. I'm focusing in on a small need for this protocol. What I'm focusing in on is that it was recognized that in Western Canada and Eastern Canada, our greenhouse gas inventory already recognizes that climatically, those two are normally different. Normally, it doesn't pour and rain and have floods in Western Canada, and we normally get more of that in Eastern Canada. This year was kind of an exception if you've been following the weather. And we had a lot of prairie land that didn't get planted owing to soaking wet land. We had rail lines washed out and that sort of thing. So my objective here was to quantify the impact of fertilizer management practices. We've based this protocol on what we call the 4R nutrient stewardship framework, okay? And that stewardship framework starts with the very fundamental basics of managing plant nutrition. You need to manage source right, rate right, and time right and place. All four have to be managed correctly. So I thought one way to be original about this analysis is to see, treat those as four factors and see whether an overall analysis of the published literature in Eastern Canada, what would fall out if we looked at all four and see what we could get there. So these are all published studies. What I focused in on, we found 35 studies in total. Most of them are already published. There are probably two in what I'm talking about today that aren't yet. We narrowed down to 20 that had rate effect comparisons with source, time, and place, and everything else more or less held constant. So we have a control rate and a treatment rate, and the difference between the two, we put the difference in nitrous oxide emissions as the numerator, the difference in nutrient rates as the denominator, and I calculate Phe, the fertilizer-induced emission, okay? So this is a pretty solid way of estimating the proportion of nitrous oxide given off in relation to the nitrogen applied. Okay, so that's the basis. The hypotheses then that I'm testing is that source, rate, time, and place influence fertilizer-induced nitrous oxide emission over a growing season. Okay, I'm going to show you two approaches by which I would emphasize that this is a preliminary exploration of the data, both of them. First is exploratory by quintiles, just essentially lining up the emissions in from the lowest to the highest, and then seeing what's associated with the lowest ones and what's associated with the highest. And then I applied a mixed linear model, I should probably give a caveat that I did not attend the mixed model seminar on Sunday. I have attended ones in the past, and I also followed essentially the procedures that were published in a paper by Steffesten and Baumann in 2006, where they applied the approach to a global set of nitrous oxide emissions. They used a different procedure than I did, but it's quite similar. So here is what we were looking at, and I guess I should emphasize that one of the big challenges when you go to meta-analysis is that, you know, it's very powerful in that statistically you have a large number of observations to work with. Okay, in these 20 studies we have 197 fully independent observations of fertilizer-induced emissions. And so we've got a large number. Our inference space, we're covering all of Eastern Canada, so and these studies are located all throughout that domain, so our inference domain is very applicable to what we're trying to do for this protocol. On the other hand, one of the criteria we have for published studies is that they be original. And so you don't find any one of these 20 that are exactly alike, and they differ in their hypotheses, so we have to keep that in mind. We're trying the best that we can to find, you know, things that are common common observations, common comparisons among these trials, but it is difficult to do. I want to go through what's included in the data set, because I believe that's important to its interpretation. We had 18 different years of observations, starting from 78 going to 2008. These observations come from four different provinces, but heavily weighted to Quebec. A lot of our work has been done in Quebec. I'm not sure if it's just the researchers were located there. So 57% of these observations come from Quebec, 29% from Ontario, and the remaining few from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Six crops are included, but corn dominates. Corn is 60% of the observations. What I list there as forage includes a number of studies that were done on turf grass as well. So they're basically all grasses and forages. And then we have a number of other crops. Soybean is a very important crop, particularly in Ontario. There, you know, Eastern Canada has close to 3 million acres of soybeans, and it only represents 1% of the observations here. Of course, soybeans aren't fertilized that much, so it's hard to work with them in this kind of analysis. The range of textures that we included ranged from 7% sand to 85% sand. pHs ranged from 5.1 to 7.7. And then let's look at what was included in terms of fertilizers. Fertilizer sources, I have most of the studies done by ammonium nitrate, 34% of the studies. 20% of them had urea, 20% manure, and we used, when I looked at manure, manure was on a total N as applied basis. It wasn't available nitrogen, so that influences the interpretation as well. Urea ammonium nitrate, NH4 included anhydrous ammonia, ammonium sulfate, and aqua ammonia. Nitrate could have been potassium nitrate or calcium nitrate. And EEF stands for enhanced efficiency fertilizers. They were basically some slow release, and there were only three of them. It's a very, very minor component, and we really don't have enough to make conclusions about. Rates, well, the median was 140 kilograms per hectare, and most of them were pretty close to that, even though the range of rates applied was from 20 to 400 kilograms per hectare. Timings, I had to put these into categories, and that's a very tricky thing, but I divided them into categories of either split application, where the nitrogen was applied in more than one time, applied in May, applied in June, and applied some other time, 9% of the studies. Placements categorized into four groups. BR there stands for broadcast, so broadcast on the surface with tillage was 41%, 26% incorporated with tillage, 24% banded or injected, and the rest broadcast on the surface of no-till. Okay. So if we look at these data from, what I did here is sort the dependent variable, fertilizer-induced emission, from highest to lowest and put them into quintiles. Okay, so the lowest quintile here has just 0.02% of the N applied is emitted as N2O. The highest quintile, 3% on average. That's the mean of the quintile. I calculated a relative significance. I just took the difference between the upper and lower quintiles and divided by the sum of the standard errors within them. It's really meaningless for this one. But then I looked at the associated variables. This really just describes what we're seeing, what's associated with the highest emissions and the lowest emissions. And we find a bit of an association with pH. Higher pH means it was associated with the lower emissions, and the converse as well. As you would very well expect, the sandier soils, lower emissions. The longer the measurement period, the greater the emissions were as well. Crop here, for categorical variables, I'm just selecting one level and telling you what percent of the of the quintile was occupied by corn, and you can see an increasing number of the observations were made under corn when you get to the high emission ones. Okay, now get to what we're looking at, the source, rate, time, and place. Okay, and again, this is most of these had to be categorical. It's one of the limitations of analysis is that source, time, and place are categorical. They're harder to analyze with statistics than rate. Rate is fairly simple. It's a single degree of freedom. These have to be put in categories, and then you have a multiple number of them. But what we're finding here, the source UAN was more frequent at the higher emission levels. Really no effect of rate. Split applications were associated with lower emissions, and the band placement with higher emissions. Okay, that's actually converse to what we found in Western Canada for the protocol. So tentative conclusions, the emissions tend to be lower with sources other than UAN, with split application, and with placements other than band, and also associated with higher percent sand and higher pH. Now, this kind of analysis, all it does is tell you what's in the database. It doesn't really tell you what's causing anything. So when I move to a mixed linear model, this is a more appropriate approach for an unbalanced design because this is a completely unbalanced data set. So we're still not fully confident. Okay, it's the same 197 observations, and I throw that into a model. I don't expect you to read and remember all these numbers here, but the important thing to remember is that to be predictive, we have to have all this information in order to bring this to the farm level. Because we have put sand in the model, the percent sand is going to have to be known when you apply this. We did find, indeed, just like in our earlier observation, sand and soil pH are significant effects. They're included in the model. Sources, we got significant effects as well. I'm not going to take these completely as, sold on UAN as the worst criminal when it comes to N2O emission. I don't think that's the correct interpretation. The correct interpretation is here is there are significant differences among sources that we found here. There are significant differences among timing, and there are marginally significant differences among placements as well. Okay, I think we need to explore more carefully as to what we haven't analyzed here is the interactions among the three categories. Well, we haven't, and we need to look more closely at that. There may be very specific combinations that either give us really desirable or undesirable results. So our preliminary observations here are rate, median, mean, and least squares mean, which is what you get from the proc mixed analysis, 0.6, 1.1, 1.5. The current coefficient used in the greenhouse gas inventory is 1.2, so this more or less agrees with it, but we've doubled the number of observations on which that's based. Source, time, place, we have potentially significant effects, but we need to look at them a little more strongly. Soil pH and texture probably do need to be included in any protocol, and we need to examine those interactions further. I'm running out of time here. I wanted to make two more important points. So what I haven't analyzed yet and what we would hope to do, only less than half of the data set has associated yield with it. A paper published in this past year by Van Groeneken et al. Looked at nitrous oxide emissions per unit of nitrogen uptake, which is quite an elegant study, suggesting that basically if you're looking at per unit of production, of crop production, you really don't get increases in nitrous oxide until you get into a surplus situation. Combine that with a study by Bernie et al. That was released this year, where they found that the yield increase since 1960 was a tremendous factor in avoiding a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions. We need to keep those in mind when we're supporting these kinds of protocols. These are the next steps and priorities for research that I deduced out of this study. I thank you for your attention. I know I've gone through a lot of details way too fast, but this presentation is available on the IPNI website, and you could pick up the details there. Thank you.